A healthy life starts with great sleep. Wake refreshed with Avocado's GOTS-certified organic green mattress, delivering breathable, back-loving support, natural materials from Avocado's own sustainable wool and latex farms, easy financing, a one-year sleep trial, and deep, restorative slumbers. Organic sleep awaits at avocadomattress.com.
Why choose a Sleep Number smart bed?
Can I make my side softer?
Can I make my side firmer?
Can we sleep cooler?
Sleep Number does that. Cools up to 8 times faster and lets you choose your ideal comfort on either side. Your Sleep Number setting. It's the Sleep Number Everything Smart Bed Sale. Every smart bed and base are on sale during our Memorial Day event. Up to 50% off, plus free home delivery. Limited time. Exclusively to Sleep Number store near you. Learn more at sleepnumber.com.
Live from Liverpool, The Dark Paranormal.
Okay, everyone, you know, as normal, I like to put out a Dark Bites episode just before the start of a new season. This time it's different, it's season 20, so we have something really special. Today we're going to do an interview with someone who is one of the UK's most respected voices in the world of the paranormal. She's a meticulous researcher, compelling storyteller, and has dedicated her life to documenting ghostly encounters from around every corner of Britain and beyond. Through books like The Almanac of British Ghosts and These Haunted Time series, she's preserved hundreds of real-life supernatural experiences that might otherwise be lost to time. So please welcome to The Dark Paranormal, Ruth Roper Wilde. Hello, Ruth.
Hello, Kev. How are you?
I'm okay, thank you. I'm not too bad. Obviously, we're looking forward to starting season 20 on Friday. But you also have your own special piece of something to look forward to, don't you? You've just released an audio book for one of your books.
I have just released my first ever audio book. A lot of people were asking me, could I start doing audio books? And I kept saying, I really can't. I'm an indie author. And the cost of one is, you know, out of my price bracket, it's thousands if you try and, you know, do one. But then I hooked up with Brennan Storr from the Ghost Story Guys podcast, and we came to a mutually convenient arrangement. And so we have produced These Haunted Times Volume 5 America, which is my only American-based book so far. And that just came out on Friday as an audiobook, and I am so happy with it.
That's amazing. I've yet to download it, but I know, knowing Brendan personally, I know that his voice, as we spoke off air about, is impeccable for something like an audiobook. So that will be a fantastic thing to listen to. And that's obviously the These Haunted Times series that you've done. The fifth version, as you rightly say, is your first venture solely into the US and the spirits around there. So what can listeners to that audiobook expect?
So I've done exactly the same ethos and how I'm writing the books with the American one as I have with all the UK ones. And that is, I start with a source story that catches my imagination for whatever reason. And usually the reason is that it's happened within my lifetime. There are accounts of it that are happening within my lifetime. And that's because when I was a kid growing up with a poltergeist in the house and I was trying to read about this sort of thing, I couldn't find anywhere that was talking about things happening to people now. It was all about things happening donkeys years ago. So I did exactly the same ethos. And then once I found a source story that's piqued my interest, what I like to go and do is go out on social media in that local area and try and find actual witnesses. And then I either speak to them or I correspond with them. Quite often we do a video chat. Obviously, if it's somewhere more local, we actually meet up for coffee, but not with me being in the UK and this being an American.
Yeah, that would be tough to do.
Sadly.
And expensive.
And expensive, yeah. But I did get one particular lady took me for a walk around her haunted house by video, which was fascinating.
Wow.
It worked really, really well. It's really good.
Yeah, no, I really can't wait to download it.
I bet you're going to really enjoy it because listening to a snippet of it myself with Brennan's, I actually forgot it was something I'd written because Brennan reads it so well. So I was getting into the stories all over again. I was like, oh, this is interesting. Oh, yeah, I wrote that. But they're all first-hand accounts.
That's hysterical.
Yeah. Yeah, it is funny. When
you, that's really good. And it's such a unique, it's a unique stance as well. The you know, to get a first-hand account, although that's what, you know, my show runs on, really. That's the fuel it runs on. But to get a first-hand account, and obviously you have a lot more interaction with those individuals than I do. I receive a finished account on their behalf, and I don't really like to tinker with it. Or, you know, I basically like to say it in their voice,
yeah,
no matter how they've put it across to me. But you obviously take a magnifying glass to that subject and will interact with the individuals who've experienced that experience.
Yeah, absolutely, because it's a different thing when you've got to write a story down for a reader to be able to imagine it than it is to hear a spoken word.
Of course, yeah.
So obviously they'll provide me with their story. I'll usually do that either over the phone, like I say, or they'll email me and we'll email backwards and forwards. And then I write that up as a story. But I have an absolute strict rule that I never, ever sex up the story.
Yeah.
So you'll find in one of my books, I forget which one it is, but I was looking into a particular haunting in a, it had been a hairdresser's shop at one point, and it was now a different type of shop somewhere in a UK village. And a chap wrote in to me and said, oh, I live in the flat above that shop. And I think my flat's haunted. I said, great, what's happened? And the only thing that had happened was that one evening when they were watching television, a Pringles tube had fallen over.
Right.
While they were watching telly.
Yeah.
That was all. But he was sure that the way it fell and the way it did, couldn't have happened by accident.
Yeah.
So that's what went in the book. It's a simple little thing, but it was a correlation with an address that had a reputation for being haunted. And it's those correlations that just fascinate me. When I go out on what I call my ghost posts on the social media locally, trying to find witnesses, I never say exactly what it is I'm looking for. So I never say, has anybody seen the ghost of the black monk or whatever that's supposed to haunt, whatever. I just say, has anybody experienced anything at this address or this location?
Yeah.
And then I get back all their own experiences. And doing it that way, it's absolutely fascinating because sometimes you get real correlations. I've got one in Bedfordshire. I think I'm up to about 9 now. And everybody who's seen it over a period of 3 decades see something that's equine related. It's horse related.
Wow.
But then I've got others where, yeah, so clearly that is something that's happening.
Yeah.
But I've got others where in the same location, you'll get a shadowy figure, you'll get light orbs, you'll get car headlights following people, you'll get strange noises coming, you know, different phenomena happening in the same location.
Yeah.
And that to me is just as fascinating because it's like, so what have we actually got here, you know?
Yeah, I do. I think on
so
that.
So that's how my books go.
Yeah, and that's an excellent way, if not a unique way, of going about gathering information and putting it across to the general public. Because what is an interesting idea there that you've touched on is perhaps it's all about the energy and perhaps it's how that individual perceives that energy that is there. So be it something that just wants to make itself known, so it could come across to me as an orb, to you as a shadow person, but it's the same energy, or is it an individual, those individuals witnessing sort of sentient individual choices made by different entities, if that makes sense?
Well, it's a really interesting question because I've even got accounts where people are there at the same time. And there's one particular road, I forget where it was off the top of my head, but the driver I spoke to was heading in one direction and there was a car coming towards him, obviously heading in the opposite direction. And from his perspective, he saw a lady pushing a pram step off the curb on his side of the road in front of his car. So, of course, he braked and swerved to avoid her.
Yeah.
At the same moment, the car coming the other way braked and swerved and stopped. So the two cars are now sort of facing each other in the road, and both drivers get out and discuss what had just happened. And it became quickly apparent that for both drivers, the lady pushing the pram had stepped off their curb, not the other curb on the other side of the road. So in effect, they were seeing a mirror image of the same occurrence at the same time. So that apparent lady stepped off both curbs at once simultaneously. And I mean, how do you explain that?
Yeah, exactly. And I'm not too sure whether you'd be aware if there was any sort of fatality on that road or...
Well, I picked up the story because the road was meant to be haunted.
Okay.
So, there was, you know, people had seen figures along that road. But I tend not to delve too much into whether or not there's been fatalities, because I tend to find you can it's like this thing that if it's a castle and somebody sees a lady in a dress, it's bound to be Anne Boleyn, or, you know, it's going to be Jane Seymour or somewhere. It's not going to just be the servant girl in a long dress that it actually is.
Of course, yeah.
So I worry that by finding an accident on the road, I'm making a link that isn't necessarily there.
That's a good point. Yeah, you're given a frame for their experience, sort of thing.
Yeah, that isn't necessarily the right frame. Yeah,
exactly. Yeah, yeah. No, it's a really good point. So obviously, I think the only book of yours that I don't own is the roadmap of British ghosts that you put together. With the exception, of course, of this new audiobook. And just before, I did ask Ruth before we started this interview if there was any sort of darker or ones that she believed were more mysterious than this standard, bog standard paranormal experience. And we'll get to that exceptionally shortly. But because I don't own that book, The Roadmap of British Ghosts, I just thought I'd very quickly and selfishly ask, if Liverpool, where I'm from, features in that book, and if so, is there anything that you can tell us from there?
Well, there's actually two roadmaps now. So there's volume one and volume two of the roadmap of British
Really?
Ghosts. Yeah. So you're very behind the times on that one, honey.
I'm very behind the times, I really am.
So I'll just have a look and see if there's Liverpool in there on my database for you. Which is there. Because there's bound to be. Oh, yeah, we've got Maryland Street is in Roadmap 1. Queen's Tunnel is in Roadmap 1. I don't know about the A roads. I'd have to do a search with the A roads.
The Queen's Tunnel is, I believe, would that be the Phantom Hitchhiker?
I think so, yes. Yeah, I'm just glad.
I'm now asking you.
Yeah, to look. I'm trying to look at my database. Because what I've got... I've got a database for road ghosts, a database for all other ghosts.
Yeah.
A database for anniversary ghosts, which was for the Almanac of British Ghosts. And then I had to create a whole nother database the year I accidentally wrote two books at once. Don't ever do that, kids. It's a really bad idea.
No. How very dare you?
I didn't mean to. It was a complete mistake.
Yeah.
I just got carried away.
The Almanac. Yeah, I bet you did. Yeah, it's easy to do so in this topic. But the Almanac is a magnificent book that I'd recommend to everyone, because it's again, it's such a unique take where you've tied in specific dates to allegedly specific activity that takes place on those dates.
Yeah, yeah.
And I'm not too sure. I'm sure it's been attempts of that have been attempted before, but you do it in a really concise, easy to follow way throughout the year. So it literally is an almanac, as you say, in the truest sense of the word.
Yeah, so it's literally laid out like a calendar, January to December. And just so for each of the dates, it lists whether, you know, if there's a haunting on that day. Obviously, there's plenty of days in the year when there isn't a anniversary haunting, but there are some days when there are literally dozens, the obvious ones like New Year's Eve, Halloween, so on. But what I've done with each one on that is the same ethos, but gone more into the history of the alleged anniversary haunting and why it's an anniversary haunting. Because in those cases, that's a bit more pertinent because it's meant to be linked very specifically to, say, a battle or the day that somebody died or, you know, a horrendous crash or whatever it was. There's a definitive link that's meant to be the haunting. And then I've tried to find whether there's anybody that's actually seen them on that date. And it all gets a bit confusing because we changed the calendar in the UK in 17...
yeah, we're good at that, yeah.
Something, yeah, 1730-something. We went from the Julian calendar to the Gregorian calendar. And essentially it changed us to 11 days ahead of where we were. So if any of the anniversary
dates... So it throws everything
dates,
out of kilter.
Everything is 11 days out of kilter prior to that 17, whatever it was, date.
Yeah.
So if you go ghost hunting on the eve of such and such a battle, because that's when it's supposed to replay itself, you should actually go 11 days later.
Yeah.
Because that's... Yeah. Well, I suppose you could get into a whole metaphysical argument as to whether the paranormal world obeys our calendars, couldn't you? So, yeah.
Exactly.
And do they bother about
the,
what our calendar said? Yeah.
I think that's the interesting thing about how you put across all of your books, though, Ruth. And this is why I would recommend them to anyone listening, is because there's you seem to I say unwittingly, and maybe it's fully, you know, it's fully thought through, but there seems to be a thread of you seem to appreciate the connections between things more than just telling a tale. So there's like an invisible thread that will weave through one narrative that you can't really put your finger on, but you kind of tie together those, be it times, be it events, be it individuals. And it's a very unique way of piecing together. You're very much like, almost, it's like a recipe, if you will. You go and you find your individual parts, and then you'll sit down, you'll make that whole pie, for want of a better phrase.
Yeah, that's a really good way of describing it, actually. I've never heard it described like that before. But yeah, it's the correlation for me. So
yeah,
I've got a location, whether that be a pub or somebody's house or a particular street, or it's a ghost that haunts a road or a path or a field. So I've got my place, and then I start trying to find things that have happened in it or next to it. And then from that, once I've gathered all of that and I've spoken to all my witnesses and people have said whether they think things happen there or not, and I always try to include, if people say they think nothing's happened there and it's all a load of tosh, I always mention that people came back and said, no, I've lived here 30 years and that nobody's ever seen a ghost in that playing field, you know, whatever it might be.
Yeah.
I try to include a bit of that for balance, because obviously
that's perfect.
Not everybody who goes there is experiencing something, and that's fair enough.
Yeah.
So that is the thread. You're right. That's that kind of thread.
Well, you need that in it, I think.
I was like it to the fact that we all know in Britain one of the most common garden birds is the robin redbreast, isn't it?
Yes.
And the robin redbreast is extremely territorial and has its own little patch of land that it considers it. And that Correct. Very frequently is somebody's back garden, yeah?
Yeah.
But how many times does the owner of that house actually see the robin?
Yeah, it's a good point.
Not as often as you'd think.
No.
And I think the paranormal's the same. You know, it can be on a patch and lots of people can wander through that patch all day, whether it be, like I say, a pub or a road or a building, whatever it is. And some of them might trip over the paranormal that day and some might not. And I don't think there's any more particular rhyme or reason to that than there is tripping over a robin in your garden. If it happens to be out that day and you happen to cross paths, then you're going to experience something. That's whether you believe or not, people. So,
that, yeah.
If
yeah,
I had
completely.
A pound, for everybody completely, who says, I don't believe, well, it won't
That's
help.
That's fascinating. it's a really, yeah, exactly. And it's a really interesting analogy to look at how this paranormal world works. So, as I said, that before I tried to glean some knowledge from you that you were unprepared for because I didn't ask you about it prior, I just sprung it on you. About Liverpool hauntings, what would you say out of what you've, you know, your entire databases as you literally do have, are some of the darker ones that you yourself think that's a bit too much for me?
I think the worst ones are always the poltergeists, because they can range from annoying to cheeky, sure, but they often seem to bring with them a stronger sense of fear to the people experiencing it, because of the way the activity tends to seem to ramp up. So a lot of the poltergeist encounters I document, they start with something quite innocuous. And it quite quickly, if the person notices it, starts to ramp up into something that starts to scare them. And that was certainly the case with the poltergeist I lived with as well. Sometimes it was just cheeky, and other times it was downright terrifying. And I think a close second to poltergeist across the books would be things that step out in front of cars, or worse, that materialise inside your car.
Oh, God, no. Yeah.
Got a couple of those.
Yes. If you could kindly regale.
Don't do it to me.
Yeah, I mean, because I do want to kind of end on, if you're okay with it, discussing what you experienced as a child yourself. Because it kind of steps, we will learn more about you as Ruth the person as opposed to Ruth the author. But also, if you'd be kind enough to regale us with a tale or two of these, appearing in the backseat of someone's car is something which genuinely sends, it's not even shivers down my spine, that doesn't do it justice. The idea of looking in your rearview mirror and seeing something appear that wasn't there, you know, that sort of thing is not for me.
I've got one that's even worse.
Please.
Even worse than looking in your rearview mirror. So I spoke to a chap, and I can't for the life of me off the top of my head remember what road it was, but it's in one of the roadmap volumes.
Hmm.
And he was driving down this country lane late at night on his way home, young lad, and driving along, and he kind of catches movement in the footwell of the passenger side next to him.
Yeah.
And, you know, imagine yourself driving along. It's dark. You don't want to take your eyes off the road, but you can kind of see something moving. So you kind of keep glancing down to your left, because we're right-hand driver in Britain.
Yeah.
You realise that you can sort of see something. So you're racking your brain. Have I left a Coke bottle or something? Is it rolling around? But as you keep glancing, you realise that you can see a glint of metal.
Hmm.
And then this glint of metal clearly becomes the buckle on a shoe, which then moves up, and you can now see a bit of a shin. and this is all happening in a few seconds. It's happening quickly.
Yeah.
And then you can see right up the leg to the knee.
And this is someone.
And then you turn and look, and there's a person
sat in the seat
next to you.
No. No.
Yep. And they sort of materialized. Feet upwards.
Wow.
All in the matter of a few seconds. And the chap said to me he was so terrified that he kind of realised he was about to crash the car because he was losing control of the steering wheel with the fear of this thing sitting next to him. So he looked ahead, kind of straightened himself like, oh, this is all in split seconds.
Of course, yeah.
Straightened the car back up, looked flat to his left, and whatever it was had gone.
Wow.
And he was not a happy chappy.
No.
Would be putting it mildly.
No. And the fascinating thing about that.
Absolutely terrified him.
I can imagine so. And the fascinating thing about that is it's not a case of he's looked to his left, looked ahead and thought, that was a man, look back and he's gone. It's as you say, he's over. And I appreciate these things will be over the milliseconds, but they still happen in real time, if you like, that he's questioned the footwell element and then he's followed, is that a shin? You know, and it's not a case of turning around and mistaking something and then it not being then your brain making up the rest. And if so, he's done that numerous times to create that individual, which is much less likely.
Much less likely. And it's the fact that it materialized from the feet upwards. You know, and it was that old-fashioned dress, you know, like silver buckled shoes, with stockings and then shorter trousers, quite an old. So
yeah,
the incongruity of seeing that sitting in a modern day car just doesn't work, does it? And
no, it doesn't work.
He made no attempt to explain it to me or give it a backstory or anything like that. He was, this is what happened. I thought there was something in my footwell.
Yeah.
Started with the glint that turned out to be the light shining as the buckle formed, if you like. And then the leg formed and then the knee and then the rest of the person. And he's left sitting in a car next to this damn thing that's just materialised next to him. I have a strict rule when I'm ghost hunting. I'll do EVPs, but nobody switches that recorder on in my car.
Yeah, I can.
Because I do not want to know.
No, exactly. Exactly, yeah. Yeah, I kind of try to do the same thing here, but that's another story. But interestingly, in terms of the idea of someone just turning up in the car to the left of you and you don't know, is it your brain? Is it the, and the fact, you know, the way the guy had explained it to you in such a matter of fact way, like as in, I'm not going to give you any backstory behind why this is, there's no after story, this is just the event. In a similar vein, the arguably one of the best ghost stories I've ever heard was less than 2 minutes long. And it was, funny enough, me and my ex-partner went to watch the latest incarnation of the Exorcist franchise. And after seeing it, I was like, that was quite good. I didn't mind it at all. We got into a taxi for a 5-minute drive back through Liverpool city centre, back to where we lived. And within that short amount of time, what did you go and see? Asked the driver. We said, The Exorcist. Oh, do you believe in all that? Yeah, we do. Let me tell you, he says, and in this, and as they often start these stories, but then he tells a story about just walking through St. James graveyard, where the Anglican Cathedral is. And the sun was just about to set. He wasn't too sure. His girlfriend kind of egged him on, like, it's quicker to cut through than it is to walk around, which it is. And he said, as he got towards the very end of the path, if you will, to the other side, he turned and saw an elderly white figure that was transparent, but also there enough that he described. Now, interestingly, he described what this woman was wearing and verbatim described that, you know, the infamous woodcut of Edward Kelly and John Doe doing the, I think it's John, I forget his name.
I know the one you mean. That's the picture of the woodcut. Yeah.
Yeah. And it's basically an Edwardian sort of death garment that they're wearing, which is like a ribbed corset down to maybe the midriff somewhere. And he described that exact outfit, but didn't know of that woodcut. He's hardly, you know, into his paranormal stuff. So that for me was what I call an authenticator. He had no idea that would have been what that individual would have been buried in. And I was like, what did you do? Because I thought he was going to say, oh, it looked at us and we ran away. He said, no, it was looking in another direction at another grave with a scowl. And we kind of just ducked under its gaze and ran off. And then he dropped us off. And in that short 2 minutes, it was scarier than the 2.5 hours we just spent in the cinema. It's fascinating.
I can well believe it. Yeah, I've got so many accounts, similar in some ways, you know, but for their sheer terror-inducing and how short the encounter was.
Yeah. Let's take a quick break to tell you about a wonderful product. Did you know there are more than 1,000 hormone disruptors living rent-free in our world? From the food we eat to the air we breathe, even the skincare we use, they could be messing with your hormones and making you feel like you're stuck in a mystery of your own. And just like a plot twist in a true crime story or one of those unexpected scary moments in our submitters' experiences, hormonal changes like premenopause or menopause can strike at the most unexpected times. And suddenly you're dealing with mood swings, sleepless nights, and all those other symptoms that make you feel like you're losing control. But here's the good news. This is one mystery you can solve with Happy Mammoth. Just take the 2-minute free quiz from Happy Mammoth, answer a few simple questions about what you're experiencing and where you're at in life, and you'll uncover the real culprit behind your hormonal symptoms. And the best part? After taking the quiz, you'll get a personalized recommendation to help you balance your hormones so you can feel like yourself again. The results are impressive. There are over 40,000 reviews on their website. Women cannot stop talking about it on social media. A bottle of Hormone Harmony is sold every 24 seconds. According to a survey, 86% of the women started losing weight. 77% say it improved their mood. And the biggest benefit? 100% of the women surveyed said they're feeling like themselves again. For a limited time, you can get 15% off your entire first order at happymammoth.com. Just use the code DARKPARANORMAL at checkout. That's happymammoth.com and use the code DARKPARANORMAL for 15% off today.
A healthy life starts with great sleep. Wake refreshed with Avocado's gut-certified organic green mattress, delivering breathable, back-loving support, natural materials from Avocado's own sustainable wool and latex farms, easy financing, a 1-year sleep trial, and deep, restorative slumbers. Organic sleep awaits at avocadomattress.com.
If you love to travel, Capital One has a rewards credit card that's perfect for you. With the Capital One Venture X card, you earn unlimited double miles on everything you buy. Plus, you get premium benefits at a collection of luxury hotels when you book on Capital One Travel. And with Venture X, you get access to over 1,000 airport lounges worldwide. Open up a world of travel possibilities with the Capital One Venture X card. What's in your wallet?
Terms apply. Lounge access is subject to change. See CapitalOne.com for details.
I've got one where there's a lady, she pulls up to a traffic light, it's late at night, and she can see a man at the side of the road who looks a bit dodgy. And she's not sure whether he's drunk or quite what, but she's a woman on her own in the car, it's late at night, was in Watford.
Yeah.
And he starts heading towards her car. And as he heads towards the car, he starts shouting and gesticulating. And she's at this point, she's like, oh my God, you know, he's about to have a go at me. Hurry up, turn lights, turn, you know, wanting to speed off. And as he gets up to the car, she thinks, I'm going to go, even though the lights are still on red. But as she thought it, he just blinked out of existence. Wasn't there.
Wow. It's unbelievable.
And I've got another one where a chap, he owns a scrapyard. And he doesn't believe in the paranormal at all, but he heard me on, I think, a radio show. And so he contacted me to tell me this encounter he'd had. He'd gone out at midnight one night because he had a valued customer of his he'd broken down at the side of the road, needed these specialist wheels for this specialist car, and he had some in his scrapyard. So he's gone to the scrapyard, which is on an old World War II disused airfield.
Yeah.
And is ideal for their scrapyard because it's got all the old hard standings where the buildings used to be.
Right.
And he's there at midnight. He's digging out these wheels and slinging them into the back of his Land Rover when he hears somebody shout. So he turns around and there striding towards him is a chap wearing jeans, a white T-shirt and suspenders, red in the face and yelling at him, what the F are you doing here? You know, wow. Who the hell are you sort of thing? And straight away he's like, oh my God, we've been broken into and I'm here on my own. And how many of them are there?
Yeah.
And I've got these really valuable wheels behind me.
Yeah.
So he's trying to shut the Land Rover door behind himself so this guy can't see, you know, because he's thinking burglar at this point or robber.
Hmm.
And the bloke walks right up to him and the two of them are now yelling at each other. Yeah, this is my yard. What the hell are you doing here? Sort of thing. And he said it was clearly going to become nasty. And the bloke got to within about 4 feet of him and just blinked out of existence.
Wow.
Right in the middle of their argument.
Wow. You know what? It's one of those things. Yeah, it's really interesting because I'm unsure whether you similarly kind of consume as much, you know, paranormal information or things that are new trend, not necessarily trends, but for example, I watch Nuke's Top 5 on YouTube. Often I'm watching thinking, no, no, no. And they're all videos submitted by viewers of alleged paranormal phenomena. But one in every, say, 20, you do think, as somebody who, and I, by no means would I call myself an expert on it, because I think if you do so, you know, with the exception of someone like yourself, who is an expert in terms of the stories that are told, if somebody proclaims himself to be an expert on the paranormal, in terms of other reasons, then I tend to stay away. But, you know, you have seen such, I've seen thousands of videos of thousands of videos of alleged paranormal activity. And there will be certain ones out of those thousands, maybe one, maybe two, that will make you go, that's something. And there's often in those that touch on what you said there, like those experiences. And they always fascinate me whenever they're featured. And it's those CCTV images of somebody who's working in like a steel plant or somewhere, and they stop and they have a conversation with someone who isn't there. And they end up being called to the office to review the footage, and they're asked, who did you speak to? And 9 times out of 10, they're like, it was Steve, who, you know, he said he was working overtime. And Steve inevitably ends up have been passed away the night before. But it's interesting, this almost lack of recognition of death by the alleged approaching spirit, if that makes any sense.
Yes, it does. Yeah. And I've got, like you say, I've got quite a few encounters like that in the books, you know, where I've got one in a prison somewhere where they thought the prisoner had gone out of one of the cells, because they had one male prisoner with long blonde hair. And they saw him walk, they thought they saw him walk along one of the landings. Of course, he shouldn't have been walking along the landings at night. So the whole protocol was enacted to go after him. And it wasn't him. He was fast asleep in his cell. But it was, you know, yeah. It was somebody else. It was a woman. And it turned out it was somebody who was supposed to have died on the premises or something. Can't quite remember the story off the top of my head, but that was very similar, where it's a walking along, yet the person it actually was, or they thought it was, wasn't. So they're just, this is why I get so tied up with my research, because it just endlessly fascinating, the different connotations and the different permutations that you get of
there
the
comes a point, sorry to interrupt, but that there comes a point, I think, where you need to just tell your brain to stop. You know, it's kind of like you've hit that wall now. You could go on forever about why this, you know, you reach the end of a thread and it just unravels further, and you just need to say, no, cut the thread, turn around and carry on with your life, as opposed to chasing this thread.
Honestly, if I had a pound for every time I've started something on my database and I've been intending to research X and I come across a little snippet whilst researching that, I think, oh, and off I go on another tangent.
Yeah.
But 3 hours later, I'm like, damn it.
Yeah. I remember during COVID speaking about that sort of thing. Again, I'm not sponsored by this guy, but that was when I first found this channel, Nuke's Top 5, you know, they send in videos, blah, blah, blah. And I must have watched voraciously maybe 300 hours worth of alleged paranormal happenings sent in by the general public. And one thing that did happen over that 300 hours, which I wish now I could go back and have been able to timestamp which episode at which part, because he's got hundreds and hundreds of episodes. But there's this one sort of, I describe it like a wraith sort of looking thing. Just imagine, you know, maybe a black cloth on a fishing wire being dragged through the sky, that sort of wraith figure that's been caught on CCTV in, where was it? One was in India, one was in Hong Kong, one was in Sydney, one was in America, and they are identical. But they were also spread across this 300 episode, 5 or 6 or 7 year range of submissions, but they were identical. And I just wish I knew the timestamps for each, because I'd love to be able to see them side by side and just say, these are 7 years apart, they're in different parts of the world. What is this? You know, sort of thing. But
that's just really interesting.
It is. And maybe that hopefully that might be one of the one benefits of AI. You one day you may be able to say, search the entire thousands of hours of this on YouTube and pull out these particular videos. We never know. But it was they are specifically, because I even remember the flight of them. That's a strange thing. How they look, the flight, they all seem to go upwards as well. They don't come at, they travel in one trajectory, but the consistency is how they look and how they travel. It's a very, very bizarre thing that the time in between the submissions to him that has took place, I don't even think has registered to Nuke or whatever his real name is as the producer of the show. But if I do see another one, I will send a link to you directly to say this is what I mean if I come across it again or if somebody submits it again, because they are identical. And that's the sort of strange patterning that I think this is not just a ghost. This is something along the elemental line sort of thing.
Yeah, definitely. Yeah, do send me it. I'm always just, yeah, send me anything paranormal. And anybody wants to send me anything paranormal, just do.
Yeah, that's actually a really good shout, to be fair. If anyone's got something they wish to discuss with Ruth, are you okay giving your contact details out?
Absolutely. My email is really simple. It's just my full name, which is Ruth Roper Wilde. And the Wild is spelt odd. It's WYLDE. So Ruth Roper Wilde, no spaces, no dots, no nothing, @gmail.com.
Brilliant. That's amazing. So YouTube, Instagram, etc., it would all be as Ruth Roper Wilde, yeah?
Yeah.
But before you go, as I said, Ruth, it'd be really good if we could kind of step away from you, the author, to you, the human being, and if you're okay with it, touch on what you experienced as a child with your poltergeist.
So this was in a house in Welling in Hertfordshire. And we moved into the house in 1976, I think. So I would have been 12 when we moved in, 11 maybe. And it was quite a big house in a cul-de-sac, not particularly old, but not terribly modern either. It's probably somewhere around 1940s or 50s, maybe a little bit older. And we'd moved there because it had another little house attached to the side of it as a granny flat, in effect. So you had the main house, which is a three-bedroomed house for my family. And then you had the little two-bedroomed house attached to it that had two interconnecting doors inside, one upstairs, one downstairs. But it also had its own full entrance that my grandparents moved into with us.
Oh.
But my grandparents at this point were travelling a lot. So quite often that end of the house was stood empty for 2 or 3 months at a time while they went on their travels. And we started noticing quite quickly funny little things happening, like I used to make myself hot milk to go to bed with, and I'd do it by heating a pan of milk on the stove, which was an electric stove. And I would, you know, health and safety people turn their ears off at this point, but I would dip my finger. I would dip my finger in the milk to see if it was warming up and getting hot. And it would be warming up, so it was on. And then it would frequently seem to just not get any hotter. And I began to realise that halfway through heating it, the cooker was being switched off at the wall. So it ended up that I used to have to literally stand with my hand over the switch on the wall in order to heat that milk up. Because if I didn't, the physical switch on the wall would flick off and turn the whole cooker off.
Wow.
So that started happening. And then we had an incident one night. Us kids used to have to take it in turns to help Mum clean up after tea. And my dad travelled a lot with his job as well. So often it was just Mum and us three kids at home. And it was my turn this particular evening to help clear up. It was summer evening, about 6 o'clock-ish. She was listening to the Archers on the radio. Sun was shining. And we're chatting away as we're clearing, and both of us suddenly caught movement out the corner of our eye. We turned to look, and there was a butter knife lazily spinning on the middle of the table by itself. So we both sort of watched it, and it started, it was still spinning, and it moved to the edge of the table. And instead of falling off the edge, like it should have done, it just kept spinning through the air and just kept going, like a sycamore leaf off a tree.
Yeah.
If you imagine that.
Yeah.
And it just kept going and going and going and going and going. And eventually it got to the floor. And my mum, who was a very practical woman, just went and got a tape measure and measured from the edge of the table to where the knife had landed and said something like, 8'2". Well, that wasn't gravity, was it? On another occasion, that's my mother for you. On another occasion, we watched it fold a tea towel up in front of us.
Wow.
So it literally folded it one way, then the other into a neat little square. It would frequently, whenever my dad was away, we'd be woken in the middle of the night by this god-awful crashing noise. And it would wake me and my sister up and my mum up. Weirdly, it never woke my brother up, but I think that's because he was a teenage boy. And it would sound like, you know, in the 80s particularly, everybody in their lounge, or it was the 70s, 80s, everybody in their lounge had one of those big units with a drinks cabinet in it.
Yeah.
You know, usually with a fold-down drawer and some glass doors on it, and all their china and you know, nice drinks and everything, and all their glasses were all kept in it.
Usually lead-lined.
And obviously we had one of those. Yes. and it would sound like that had fallen forward and everything had fallen out of it and smashed. And then the unit had kind of whooshed on top of everything as it fell.
Yeah.
And we'd get like, oh, my God, what was that? And mum go, oh, my unit's gone over. And rush downstairs, nothing disturbed.
Wow.
So then she'd go, oh, my God, your dad's motorbike's gone over in the garage. So we'd go out to the garage. No, motorbikes are fine. And then we'd stand outside and listen. Well, has there been a crash on the road or something? No, all silence. And that would happen, 4 or 5 times a year easily. That we'd be woken up by that awful noise. But the thing it did that was most terrifying is it started really hassling my sister whenever she used the bathroom. Now, for some reason, when they moved in, never knew why, because we were only kids and parents don't explain their logic. The main family bathroom in our side of the house, they ripped it out when we moved in, obviously intending to put a new bathroom in. Yeah. But they never got round to putting a new bathroom in while we were living there. So we had a downstairs cloakroom in our side of the house. And in my grandparents' side of the house, they had a shower room downstairs and a full-size bathroom upstairs.
Mm.
So our side of the house used to walk through Mum and Dad's bedroom, through the interconnecting door, out onto Nana's landing to use the bathroom up there if we wanted to have a bath, have a wash, do your teeth. All that sort of thing was all done in that, you know, but in Nana's side of the house.
I see.
So when they were away on these travels, you can imagine you're actually going into an empty house, in effect, to have a bath or, you know. And my sister started complaining that whenever she was in there, somebody would come and bang on the door and it was scaring her. So I went in there with her. Yeah, I went in there with her one time because I was convinced it was our little brother. And I'm sat on the loo with the loo seat down. She's in the bath. And something started pounding on that bathroom door and trying the handle so violently that the door was actually flexing in its frame, if you know what I mean.
Yeah, yeah.
And it was like somebody was beating on it with two fists. So my sister started screaming, went to speak to me. I shushed her because I didn't want my brother to know that I was in the bathroom. And I crept to the door while it was still being pounded on.
Yeah.
And flung it open to confront my brother, only to find that there was nobody there.
Wow. Wow.
And there's a corridor there. So bearing in mind, the person, whatever was banging on that door was banging as I unlocked it. They could not possibly have got out of my line of view.
No.
Even if they were Superman.
Yeah. Because you've opened that door as an to be the element of surprise, haven't you? Really?
As it's happening. Yeah.
Wow.
Because I was convinced it was my brother trying to scare her. So I have opened that door deliberately thinking I'm going to catch a human with their fists raised, pounding on the door. And instead I get an empty, dark hallway.
Yeah. Isn't it interesting that there seems to be both? I mean, for example, the pounding on the door, that I ascribe, maybe rightly or wrongly, to a masculine energy. Yet the folding of the tablecloth, that would, and again, maybe wrongly, I ascribe to a female energy. It's interesting that both of those energies seem to be within that environment.
But you know, that's a very interesting take on it, because nobody's ever suggested that before. They've asked me what my take on it is, and I always just thought of it in terms of sometimes it was in a mischievous mood, like turning the milk off. Sometimes it was in a helpful mood, like folding the tea towel. And sometimes it was in a bad mood, like scaring the bejesus out of us. I never thought of it as two different possible entities, to be honest.
Yeah.
I just thought of it as the thing in our house.
And it's an interesting thing because the...
So, yeah, it's interesting.
Because something to pound... I mean, I know that none of us know what sort of strength or other things you may gain when you cross over, but the idea of pounding on a door so it flexes in the door without sounding too sexist does not sound like the same energy that is able to neatly fold a tablecloth. That to me, that would signify two different energies, as in two different individuals or former individuals. But as you rightly say, it could be just one giant source of energy choosing which level it's operating at the same time. But it's very interesting, and it must have been terrifying for you.
Yeah, it was horrible. And I understood why my sister didn't like going to the bathroom anymore. Yeah, most of the time you just lived around this thing, and it did these odd quirky things, and it was just weird. But every now and again it would do something like this that was absolutely terrifying. Yeah. And then it was just horrible. And some days it would do it and it would literally do nothing, but you were nevertheless terrified. And I remember one particular day when I was doing my A-levels and I was home alone, so nobody else anywhere in the not in Nana's End, not in our end. And I'd been revising and I'd gone downstairs to get myself a sandwich and a drink. And I'd made myself a sandwich. It was on a little side plate. I've gone through into the lounge, I've got a glass of milk and my sandwich, and I'm sat in my dad's chair, which if Dad had come over, I'd been told off for, but he wasn't home, so that was fine. Sat in my dad's chair, and I'm eating my sandwich, and I've got the radio quietly playing, and it's a bit of an overcast, dull day. And I'm halfway through lifting the sandwich to my mouth, and I get this sudden visceral feeling of, oh my God, if you move, it'll see you.
Wow.
And it was like I'd suddenly been laser focused on by a predator.
Yeah.
And I literally froze with this sandwich halfway to my face, like a rabbit in headlights. And of course, a split second goes past and your rational brain takes over. Mm. And what on earth's the matter with you, girl? Stop being so stupid. And I moved the sandwich the rest of the distance to my mouth and took the bite. And that feeling went from it's in the house with a laser focus to that focus has seen you move.
Wow.
You are now in trouble. And I was so scared, just like that, that I literally flung this plate down, flung the milk down and legged it out of the house and spent the next 3 hours sitting on the bonnet of our Land Rover, even though it was drizzling. Waiting for somebody else to come home because I was too scared to go back in the house.
Wow.
And yet, nothing, on that occasion, nothing actually happened.
But nothing.
It was just a feeling.
Yeah, no, I was going to say nothing visual or auditory happened in terms of, your rational senses. But you knew yourself. You were in some form of danger. You felt you were in some sort of danger. Not to be overridden, and I don't think that's to be overlooked in any way, shape, or form.
No, I agree. In later life, I've learned listen to your senses. If your senses are saying this is dangerous,
it's dangerous.
Something's wrong here. There probably is something wrong
here. Yeah, there's a reason why I listen to your gut
exists. And that feeling that day. Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely.
That feeling sounds absolutely... I mean, the feeling that you described that day, it's almost... There must be something in that in terms of... I don't necessarily just mean human psychology, but it's played a lot on in films and horror films. It's not necessarily the scene of the ghost or the whatever that gets you. It's the suspense of seeing nothing, the nothingness, or the expectation can be worse. And that's being played on by Hollywood, because that's a real thing. And you experience it there to the nth degree.
Absolutely. Yeah, and caused by something. I mean, if you imagine that my state of mind just before it happened, I'm a teenage girl doing her A-levels. I'm thinking about my A-level that I've just been revising all morning. I'm fed up with revising.
Yeah.
I'm wishing somebody'd come home so I'd have an excuse to stop revising. The last thing I'm thinking about is scary, paranormal, horror.
Yeah, exactly.
Nothing. I'm revising for a history or whatever A-level at that point. And suddenly, out of nowhere, in the middle of eating a sandwich, bang, the world suddenly changed.
What a great way of describing it.
And I can't explain it to this day. And it just, I am absolutely certain there was no sound, there was no scent, there was no noise, there was no movement, there was just the feeling of you are suddenly in the crosshairs of something really dangerous.
And what a way to end this beautiful, wonderful interview. I hope it's not the last time that we speak, Ruth. It's been an absolute honour and a privilege as a fan of yours. And best of luck with the audiobook. So it's the, remind us of the title again. I have it wrote down and can't read my own handwriting. These Haunted Times, Volume 5, of course.
It's These Haunted Times, Volume 5.
Yeah, amazing. America. And it's narrated by the wonderful Brennan.
Brennan Store, yeah. But it's been lovely to come on. And honestly, anytime you want to talk ghosts, I'm your girl.
You certainly are. You certainly are. What a pleasure it's been. And thank you so much for joining us for today's show.
Thank you so much, Kevin. Been lovely.
Hey, baseball fans, it's time to swing big on your bets this season. Step up to the plate with an odds boost token from BetMGM, an official sports betting partner of Major League Baseball. No opt-in is required. Just log into your BetMGM account to receive your odds boost token. Then, place a bet on any MLB game and activate your token. If your boosted bet hits, you'll score a bigger payout, no matter the showdown. BetMGM is your betting home for baseball. Major League Baseball trademarks used with permission. BetMGM and GameSense remind you to play responsibly. See BetMGM.com for terms. 21 plus only. This U.S. promotion offer not available in Mississippi, New York, Nevada, Ontario, or Puerto Rico. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. Available in the U.S. For New York, call 877-8-HOPE-NY or text HOPE-NY-467-369. For Arizona, call 1-800-NEXT-STEP. For Massachusetts, 1-800-327-5050. For Iowa, 1-800-BETS-OFF. For Puerto Rico, 1-800-981-0023. Subject to eligibility requirements. Rewards vary and expire in 1 to 7 days. In partnership with Kansas Crossing Casino and Hotel.
Why choose a Sleep Number smart bed?
Can I make my side softer?
Can I make my side firmer?
Can we sleep cooler?
Sleep Number does that. Cools up to 8 times faster and lets you choose your ideal comfort on either side. Your Sleep Number setting. It's the Sleep Number Everything Smart Bed Sale. Every smart bed and base are on sale during our Memorial Day event. Up to 50% off, plus free home delivery. Limited time. Exclusively to Sleep Number store near you. Learn more at sleepnumber.com.